Welcome to another episode of Under the Mango Tree, a podcast of Vila Sur residents of the Goethe Institute Salvador Bahia. Here, we embrace artistic research, global exchange, and the story that arises when Salvador meets the world.
Vila is a theater artist specializing in object theater and puppetry. She studied in Canada and works across communities in Canada, the Caribbean, Mexico, and Latin America. She researches food narratives and creates performance with food, that's right, edible object theater.
Vila, welcome to Under the Mango Tree.
Thank you.
Podcast of Vila Sur. Since when are you here in Bahia?
I arrived on the end of September.
Long time. 1 month.
2 months now.
2 months.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying?
I am. I'm enjoying a lot. We've been doing a lot of things. We were invited to so many gallery openings, and we did a lot of going out and cultural events, and I worked also.
It was your first time in Brazil or Bahia?
My first time in Brazil.
Brazil. Yeah. So tell me, do you remember the first feeling that you felt when you get in the ground of Bahia, in the first breathe? What did you think? What did you feel?
In Salvador, I was so happy to arrive because it was a 23 hours trip from Montreal, and I was welcomed by Senna, our driver at the Goethe, so already taken care of, and that would last the whole time in Goethe, like all these little attentions and people taking care of us. So
very nice. And what brings you here? I mean, I'd like to know about your project that brings you here, and also about what you do.
What I do is theater, and I work mainly with puppetry and objects. I am part of a collective that's called Les Cabinets, and we do theater in boxes, so like miniature puppetry, and it's called Lambe Lambe. It's actually from Brazil. I collaborate with different artist collectives also, and I've been working on my object theater project for a few years now. It's a documentary process. It's with food, and that's what I came to do here. It's called Fofocas Como Estiveis, Edible Gossip, and it's based on research about food and agriculture. It was born in the Caribbean, but I worked with it in Mexico, in Canada, and now here. So I was researching here about the monoculture issues and also the alternatives like community gardens and like short chain food processes.
That's funny because you work with edible object theater. Like, normally you have idea that everything in theater is false. Everything in theater is not true and constructed. But you work with organic. It reminds me also Vic Muniz, artist plastic that works with real food, his work. And you work with real foods. This idea appeared to you to come here to Vila Sur, which was a deal that you've been working a long time ago.
Actually, Brazil is one of those countries that I know I'm going to go someday, and there's something that attracts me to it, but it's going to come naturally through a project, and life is going to give it to me somehow. And this appeared thanks to the Arts Council of Quebec, which is a partner. And Goethe received two people from Quebec every year. And I was scrolling on their page, which I don't do often. And I saw this residency. It was like 5 days before the deadline. I was like, yes, I'm going there. Their team, I read about their mission, was about sustainability and the dynamics between North and South, South and South, and emerging countries. And since I'm talking about the food industry, I also talk about those dynamics. So I was like, okay, this is perfect. I hope they choose me, and they did.
This project, Gossip Comestibles,
yeah.
It's almost a collective ritual. Theater is always collective.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, the audience is here, the performer is there. The concepts, comestibles, like put everyone together. How has this experience evolved here in Salvador? Did you experience this, and how was the reaction of the people from here?
Yeah, it's funny that you talk about ritual. I think this is very like common in theater, because theater comes from rituals. But my scenes always end up in some sort of ceremony or like ritual that I get the public to participate in, some sort of offering. Of course, it resonates a lot with people here because there's this strong presence of spirituality and rituals and ceremonies. So it's something that I guess the audience feels already close to, so they can easily relate and engage with. And it's almost also syncretism, because I have some scenes that is just one I did today with green onion, which is like a predicator, so very religious priest almost. And then the spirit of the mandioca comes, which mixes some native spiritualities, and then there's an offering that's done to the mandioca, so it's like mixing everything. And and there's a promise that's made to Mother Earth. Also, I did that with kids today, and it was really cute. They all got in to like help me grate the mandioca, and we placed it somewhere so they could receive the blessings every day.
It's nice because we give life, food, like the food talks to us. We live in a world that we are killing everything necessary organic. What's your motivation to do this type of dialogue between the human being and the things that they eat? What's your motivation?
I started this project. I was just playing with food and things from the kitchen, and it was very like gossipy little scenes with already like a lot of wordplay. And food is a fun thing to work with because you can really transform it. Like, you take a fruit, you could cut it, you could empty it, and according to what's happening to them, right? Like, I had a papaya at some point. It had lost all the seeds because it was so shocked. So you could actually like remove it and then show it to the public, and you see it's empty, and it's like, oh. And then I became vocal about the extractive side of what's happening with the food, because we are in relation with food all the time. We eat hopefully 3 times a day, and the whole process of the food, it's very present in our life, but we don't always know where it comes from. Some of us are really disconnected from what's happening like behind our plate or behind our kitchen. So I started to investigate about this, and I'm also learning as I go through this process. So educating people, I also educate myself at the same time.
How the project works, like you write the text before, because when you think theater, you always think about text, and you write the text, and then someone directs you, or you direct yourself and you perform it. How is the logistic of the project?
So it's a documentary-based research. So first there are the investigations. So I get to some place and I see, okay, what can I talk about? Or I already have an idea. Like, coming to Brazil, I knew already about the soya issue, for example, that causes deforestation. Soya is used to feed animals a lot. And I'm like, okay, I research about soya, and researching it gives me ideas. Like, I always have this, who can be a character, what could happen to them. So soya and corn are fed together to the animals, like they can be a couple. And then why would we deforest to have only corn and soya everywhere? Or because of jealousy, they only want to be by themselves, they don't want any other plants around them. And so it develops like this, a dramaturgy in my mind as I'm doing the research and also talking to people about it. Then I always try to brainstorm with others, and I write, I love text, and then I find objects. So the objects also inform the dramaturgy a lot. Like, I put myself on my feet, the objects on the table, and I start moving around. And then puppetry and object theater is a lot of problem solving. So there's going to be like, oh, a problem here. And the solution is going to also guide the dramaturgy. The solution is advancing also the process. And I direct myself, if I can, I get someone else to be external eye. And I like to have some people coming in. Like, I always invite Henry, played a saxophone for the performance today. Here I have Luani, who's my interpreter, and she actually jumped in as an actress interpreter. So I have some interventions like that. So people, collaborators, jump in and have their little grain of salt.
Let's talk about your journey here in this land, because Maria is like a land. A lot of different type of foods. Have you been in the São Joaquim market?
Yeah.
Where your food becomes characters in your work.
Yeah, just São Joaquim. Also, all the objects, right? I'm crazy about objects, so it was very impressive to me. And all the foods I don't know, like, I became really curious and tried different things that I didn't know. And for characters, oh, I did a scene about cacao that I created in the Caribbean, and I adapted it to present here. And actually, I was surprised and happy to see that here cacao, like the fruit, is sold everywhere. You can get it really easily. And, you know, like in Dominican Republic, it's important too, but you don't have the fruit. Like, I had to go to the countryside, and then people would offer me the fruit all the time, but it's not like readily available in the markets. So that was a thing. I also have this scene where I do a beauty contest between two fruits. Sometimes it's two vegetables, like two carrots. In Quebec, usually I use an apple and a mango, because a mango, you know, it's so exotic. We love it, but also it comes from really far, so all the ecological impact has to be counted. And here I used bananas. So there's like a lot of different bananas that we don't have in Canada. For example, we have only one banana, it's the Cavendish. Here I used Masao as the other character that's more local, comes from a family farm. I know there's a lot more bananas also. And I was trying to find soya. It's impossible to find greens, like fresh soya. I looked in São Joaquim, I asked everyone around, and it's ironic because it's in a lot of food, a lot of processed food, and you feed animal with it, so all the dairy, like all the meat, but the fresh ones, you can't get it, so I had to cheat.
Yeah, did you try some Portuguese in the market there?
Yeah, I was by myself, so I had to. Un poquinho.
Poquito. If I ask you which scene or conversation that you take with you in this experience in Vila Sul in Bahia, which moment will you bring to you, to your work, have with someone, or a good talk with someone that you take with you?
I presented some scenes at the beginning of the residency, and that allowed me to connect with a lot of inspiring people. And I was really impressed with this young man, Felipe Tucha, that was talking about all these concepts I was trying to bring in my work, like with a lot of knowledge about them. And then he does theater too, so mixing it with theater concept, like, it really got my work, and he expressed it so well. I was like, oh my god, I want you to write an article about this. So I kept in contact with him. We actually did a podcast here together, and that also gave me like this idea. I had already started to add some things to the show, apart from the performance, like collective conversations, or like trying to surround me with people who could offer maybe compost workshop or some sort of agriculture at home workshop that people could bring with them. So, but this gave me the idea of maybe write about it, like really to make the work grow around the performance as a education tool, just have different mediums to communicate the message and the image. And then also the collaboration with Luani, like, I really like to see the ways in which interpretation and translation could be played out. That was really fun. And I also did a collaboration with Acerola Company, which is our intern Isabelle's company. And it was the first time that I directed other actors. It was a group of five, and we did some movement work. We worked with Cocos, because I see Cocos everywhere here. I was like, okay, let's play with Cocos. Let's go crazy with Cocos. We did the Coco Loco scene. I'm starting another process that's also a documentary about another extractive industry, that's the mining. And I did a collapse of a tailing dam with our bodies with them. And that was also part of this collaboration that I take with me.
If you could wish some people, Brazilian people, after all this experience with foods, what suggestion would you say to Brazilian people about food?
I think it's to everyone, right? And to even myself, but to find that connection again to substance and to what we put in our bodies and how we treat the land. And I wish for us soil that's alive, you know, like it's supposed to be. Right now it's really like the earth has been worked so hard. It's like there's nothing left. It's really tired. I wish for us rich and alive and fertile and abundant land, connection with it, so we can find our balance back, not be eaten alive by monopolies and big corporations.
Funny, because the name of this podcast is Under the Mango Tree.
I didn't know. I
wish you have a good future with your gossips comestibles. I hope it grows around the world. Thank you to stay with us this moment here in Bahia, Vila Sul. Thank you tonight.
Obrigada. Muito obrigada.
Amy Wickes is a musician, radio host, and cultural organizer based in Berlin. His work blends jazz, folklore, sounds of the nature, and improvisation. The son of a Brazilian mother, he investigates and raises the energies of Bahia music, and also dove deep into the Mafia cultures. Hey, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell me, how was it to you to reconnect in Bahia, to connect to Brazil, a place of your mother? I mean, you're not Brazilian, but you are son of a Brazilian one. How was it for you to reconnect to a place of your mother?
Well, it's very interesting for me, my Brazilianness.
You feel like this? You feel like Brazil?
Say that it's interesting because I have a Brazilian passport. I am Brazilian, yeah, in some ways. But for me, there's always been this kind of imagined space between, you know, having this part of Brazil but not knowing anything about it, which has created this space for me to use my imagination to fill this gap, which by going on this trip, I could fill in some of these gaps that I had created in my head, you know, understanding what it meant to be Brazilian compared to what I imagined it might be, actually experiencing Brazil.
How was your imagination of Brazil? It fits with your imagination, or it's different than you think?
Both and neither at the same time. It's not that simple, because we all imagine that we will be able to go somewhere and it might change. You know, when you have the opportunity to fulfill a dream, you always think of the easy bit, the magical bit. And it's never that simple. But at the same time, coming here was so important to me because it actually meant kind of becoming into this reality I thought of for so long. And yeah, I think what people have told me about Salvador and also this experience of Brazil that I've had have been very true, this very open, very welcoming, full of joy and expression. And that I'm really grateful to receive. And I think what I found more interesting is the reality of my understanding, because I am Brazilian, but I'm also not Brazilian at all. For me, this whole trip has been a journey of understanding myself more and understanding maybe these differences and trying to understand what that means.
You are a musician, you work with sounds, you work with the design of sound, the sound, the rating things. So, if I ask you, how was your first moment here in Bahia? And thinking about the sound, how was to listen to my ear the first time when I arrived. Mm. How did you feel this scene?
What's really funny is I live in Berlin, and I left Berlin to come here, and I was very stressed. I left very quickly. And so my head was full of, I had three or four performances in the week before leaving Australia. And I remember really my flight was overnight, and I arrived in Bahia at 1 in the morning. And I really remember, the feeling on my skin of the heat, and I remember the sound of the crickets, because it was nighttime. And I really... And it was very peaceful because it was nighttime in the airport, so it was not very busy.
It was night or early morning?
Early morning.
Early morning. So tell the people now that is listening, that are listening to us, what you do your job.
Mm.
And how was your meeting with this job, with this profession?
I think I can call myself a musician, which is moving to Berlin 5 years ago was part of that path to becoming a musician. I'm living in a city where there's a huge art theme. I think I've been lucky that I've been able to follow my curiosity of sound and to be inspired by music and understand that music is what gives me joy and sanctuary as well. And it's funny when your hobby is your job and it's your artistic practice. It's complicated, isn't it? It's like being in a relationship. And there's good bits and there's bad bits, but you're very glad, or at least I'm very glad and inspired and grateful to be doing that.
There's jazz, folklore, mythology, we mix different type of things. And it also works only with musical issues, also with crickets.
Well, I'm very interested in, especially as I was becoming more of an artist, I understood that the thing that is important is to be yourself, to understand yourself, because my worldview is the only thing that I can give a unique perspective on. And so these various genres and ideas are my interests of, the jazz. Growing up, I'm a saxophonist, so kind of listening to jazz music a lot. Also, folk and church music and classical music was a big influence for me. Mythology was something I'm interested in. Stories, and I'm very interested in how the world is seen through many different eyes. And for me, trying not to apologize for my interest in actually decide I can try and do it all, and through these experiments and these practices, maybe I hone in my ideas more and more. And I normally work with sound. I got the opportunity this year to start working more with set design and understanding that to be an artist is about the complete aesthetic, not just about the sound aesthetic.
Yeah, the project that you brought here to the zoo. Investigate erasures and forgotten heritages.
Mm.
Please tell me about this project. And what led you to investigate erasures and forgotten narratives of Bahia music? Mm. What's the motivation to investigate these forgotten issues?
Well, this is interesting because I think the project that I applied with was about narratives from... I wouldn't use the word forgotten narratives, but maybe underground narratives or narratives that have not gained popular consciousness. And that became because I was interested in the Brazilian music industry. And there was almost a homogenization of what it meant to have Brazilian music. And often the music that was heard, especially in Europe, was dictated by major record labels. And they had dictated the narrative of Brazilian music is in quotation marks. So I was interested in what hadn't been shared. And that led me to researching here. But it was interesting that my research took a completely different path because I came here and I understood that actually the narratives that I didn't hear in Europe weren't because they didn't exist. It was actually because the Brazilian music market is very big. and it didn't need to reach Europe to be well known. So a lot of music I found here that was well known, just not to people outside of Brazil. Which led me to also then look at, okay, what is the underground art scene in Salvador? What are the narratives that maybe aren't being spotted even in Salvador, and exploring other ways of communicating art? And actually led me to a project which involved patient laws, graffiti artists, and involved me working with someone called Leo Papel to create an artwork with patient laws, which is about entities and these kind of figures that go unseen within art and culture that is seen so often, like with graffiti. You know, it's around us all the time, but you don't necessarily know he was making it. And that's the thing with music, and it's the thing with the sound. Often sound affects us all the time, but you don't necessarily know who the artist is. So it's quite a development.
Well, I guess that brings a lot of stories in here. I think you work here like 2 months, and Lasso, maybe even more.
I think so.
Yeah. You did a lot of musicians here. We collaborated with local musicians, like Sad, Papel, and also Enyo. The videos, Cardoso. How did these dialogues transform you? I mean, which encounter or meeting makes you more transformed? Tell me about this meeting.
That's a good question. I mean, Vieras and Enyo are two people I got the pleasure of also interviewing and spending time with. Both of those encounters were really special. I think the two things that stood out for me was that they approached music and art both with a sense of joy and kind of a really positive energy, which is hard to necessarily just translate, but it's this really welcoming, positive force. But also with a sense of urgency, knowing how important art is, how important music is, and understanding that it's important to not only to do music and art, but also to have meaning behind it. Whether that is a meaning of, you know, a positive, like, you know, because if you do things with a positive kind of happiness and joy, that brings good things to the world. Also urgency, because the world is not in a great place right now, and actually the need to communicate this is really important. And both of them held this really special energy. And it affected me. And I spoke to many friends about this kind of urgent, I don't know, this art here has an importance to it, that it's like, yeah, people have thought about what they're doing because it really matters.
Fantastic news points on a special moment. What were the most unexpected meeting that you got here?
I got the pleasure to collaborate with a group of musicians called Alt Black, who are from the African continent, and they were here for Artivism. And we connected via a friend in Berlin who tagged me and posted on Instagram about one of my friends being here. And we ended up performing at Artivism. They invited me to perform with them. It was really special because it was a nice moment for me to realize that I had these connections all around the world, and to really just lean into these moments where suddenly I'm on stage with these really amazing musicians. Again, also learning from them as people. And you have these moments where you just pinch yourself, you know, where, like, I think, again, being a musician, it's had ups and downs. It's not really easy, but, you know, I'm in Salvador playing with these, you know, musicians from Sudan and South Africa. And it was sharing these different perspectives, these different knowledge, and I think also there becomes a responsibility in that to try and understand these perspectives.
Let's talk about sound. I mean, the sound of the sea, because you work with all the sound of the water, of the ocean, and which place of the sea you feel like you have the most special sound of the sea that you bring with you after Vilasu?
I always take those snapshots of places where, like, you know, my mind of really, like, special moments. My favorite place or sound is
in Rio Vermelho, actually at the bottom of the big hotel, you know, and you go, I've sat there and you can see the whole of the coast, you see the whole of Salvador, and you listen to the sound of the water against the rocks. It's something I wish I could bottle up and just hold me forever.
It's nice to be with you both, because both brings us something like natural issues of the sea, like food and sound, and this whole thing is very organic. Yeah, of course, the music is sound organized, but you work with the sound of the sea also. You work with the food.
And I do food organized in scenes.
So it's amazing to organize this organic things by through your lens of artist. How this experience my year in Vila Sul Brasdens may influence your music or your projects in the future? Can you measure this? Or it's like
if
you can think about it,
well,
just let the future
come. I think what Vila Sul has provided for me is an opportunity to actually be still. And I think it's provided an opportunity for me to think more about how I can be intentional with the artistic decision that I make. And so I think that is going to have a big effect, because I hope that I can just be more focused and make sure that, understanding myself more, trusting myself more, and understanding my resilience more, you know, and all this opportunity just to reflect inwards, which is not something that happens very often. You don't get this opportunity to. It's amazing. So it's really something that I will hold with me for a long time. And on one hand, it's a contradiction. It's almost immeasurable, but also at the same time, it's a pattern, and we're leaving next week. And so, who knows? But I think it has had a profound impact on me moving forward.
This is the moment of a difficult question.
Can I ask something?
Yeah.
About Pakatum. Because I see you going to rehearse with them every week. How did you meet them, and what was your experience with them? And then maybe if you can touch upon what Brazilian music do you hear in Europe, and what do you hear here that you didn't know about?
Well, I met Pakatum Jose from Pakatum at the Meet & Greets early on in the residency. And he invited me to Pakatum. To summarize, I think music has a powerful impact on communities, and I think especially youth music projects are just so amazing. And I think people who do that are so generous with their time. And so I got to go to Pakatum and listen to and play with these amazing, amazing young musicians, and witness also how much it meant to them that these musicians, they would. I remember one session at the end of the course, they were crying. They were saying how much it was special for them. And so I was really honored to be invited to be part of that. And it was amazing to see. It reminded me how important youth music is, and also the responsibility that musicians and artists have to give something back. And I'm also excited to be recording with a few of them. And also how Jose talks. He talks about percussion music as a language, as a deep knowledge. And there's always this famous saying that the drum is the most ancient technology. And when I talk to him and listen to his music, I really experience that. So it was a great honor, and I hope to be back playing with him at some point.
Thank you very much from here under the mango tree of Vila Sul artistic presence. We wish you deeply that your sonic layers continue to resonate around the world. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's what Vila Sul stands for. Meetings, discovers new experience and ways of imagining the world. If you want to know more about Vila Sul Residens, stay tuned for the next episode of Under the Mango Tree, a Good Institute podcast. Bye-bye.